and you will get the bug. It will be so addicting, and you will want to do it every day of every minute, every, like, oh, it's just, something is so incredible just watching the kids get excited about building and making, and especially the cardboard challenge, because it's arcades, so they really get excited about it, because who doesn't love going to an arcade? And just seeing that, and I feel like an event like that is also really fun, because it gets the parents involved, it gets the parents on board in the community, and administrators, they love to come and play the games and everything, and they connect in that way, and they're like, oh, like, we should do this more, like, let's try and find more opportunities for teachers to be able to do that too.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsom.
Yes, welcome again to the Physics Ed Podcast. Big week this week. We get to speak with Tori Cameron, who is an incredibly passionate educator, but I tell you what, she loves her STEAM stuff so much so that she's setting up the STEAM lab in her school. All the classes right across the school get to come and play with her in terms of tech, in terms of low tech, in terms of all different ways to get STEAM pumping in their school. And Tori really, really loves it, so much so that she's also heads up the STEAM Up the Classroom podcast. So very, very passionate when it comes to, well, making and all that type of thing, and also very practical when it comes to elementary and middle school education. So it's a bit of a longer episode, so let's get right into this. I hope you enjoy it. And I tell you what, I enjoy talking with Tori too.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech and more. To see 100 fun free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S. And click 100 free experiments.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited.
I am very excited to have a chat with you. In fact, I only just had a chat with you.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of funny to be like, oh, hey, when we've been talking for like over an hour.
Yeah, we have, because full disclosure, Tori runs an awesome podcast called STEAM Up the Classroom. And they actually had reached out to Tori a little while ago, because we've been chatting on Twitter a lot through primary STEM chat, which Rachel Lear, who is a past guest on the Phys Ed podcast, runs.
And a future guest on mine.
Oh gosh, it's like we're all talking to each other.
I know, right?
But I mean, Tori's been doing some fantastic work when it comes to, you know, science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics. And I really wanted to have a chat to Tori about why and how. So Tori, tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. So I actually am in a brand new role at the same school that I've been at, but a brand new role this year. And last year, my principal had, he had approached me in the middle of the year, probably with an idea that he wanted to start a makerspace. And he had just been just wondering if I had any ideas or anything like that. And from there, it spiraled into they actually, the library wasn't being used, and it hadn't been used for many, many years. And so he wanted to put the makerspace in the library so that the library could be basically revitalized and to have kids learning in there again and doing all sorts of things. And so I helped come up with some ideas on what to do with that space. And then from there, it actually grew into a position. So never did I think that this would happen so quickly or happen in general, but I've come into a new role, and we call it the STEAM Lab. And basically I am a specialist teacher, so I get to see every single kid in the school. And it's roughly like 750 or something like that kids. And we just started, the school year just started a few weeks ago. So it's been like a huge change going from a classroom teacher where I have route about 40 kids, because I'll have two different groups of kids, to all of the kids in the whole school. So it's been really amazing. And we've been starting it up with all new technology and new lessons and everything. And it's been a brand new experience for me. And then prior to that, I was a classroom teacher. And I also worked for a little while as a director of STEM education for a nonprofit organization, and I made just different curriculum for their STEM programs that they had run through after school programming, and they had the preschools and daycare centers. So I worked with little kids too, and then they also had just some family events and stuff like that. So it's been pretty cool to see how everything has kind of tied together, and I never knew that it would happen at this point, and I'm so grateful for it. And then you mentioned earlier that I have a podcast. So last year I kind of just started it on a whim. Last summer I had presented for Education Closets Arts STEAM and Integration Conference. That's like their, it's online, and so anyone in the whole world can actually see it, and they can either see it live or they can see it at a later time. It's so cool. Definitely one of the coolest conferences that I've ever been a part of. So I actually presented at that, and I just got the bug with talking to people, and I started using Twitter to talk to other teachers, and I loved the conference because I talked to so many teachers and so many educators during that conference that I wanted to continue the conversations. So I'd actually spent that summer, was a summer after my son was born. So he was a little newborn, and I spent the summer walking around with him out in my neighborhood and pushing him in the stroller and listening to podcasts. And so I eventually kind of decided, well, I kind of want to try this and see how it goes. And, you know, if I'm the only one that ever listens to my own podcast, then I think I'll be okay with it, because I'll be, you know, happy to learn something new from whoever is my guest. But it's grown from there, and it's pretty cool now that that I've been able to reach so many different people, but also have so many people reach out to me and either ask to be on the podcast or tell me something that they learned from it. So that's all I could ever want. It's pretty cool. So that's a little bit about me.
That's a bit about you. So you have a lot on. And by the way, that is fantastic. Your school's really deep diving in on a makerspace. I mean, that's exactly what I really want to talk about. I mean, hearing about exactly what's happening in your school with the STEAM Lab is just awesome. But hey, well done with STEAM Up the Classroom. So by the way, you know, totally type STEAM Up the Classroom into your favorite podcast catcher, and you totally will be able to hear about not just from your standard, hey, let's just talk teacher-to-teacher about how we do STEAM, which, by the way, has a lot of importance. But also, I mean, your recent episode was students themselves. Which
Really cool. That one was really cool. I had mentioned to the kids a few times that I had a podcast, and they knew how much I loved doing STEM because I did it all throughout the year. And at the end of the year, I was like, well, would anyone actually want to come on it and tell me about what you guys think? And I had so many different kids that were interested in it, and it actually was made into a little TV show for the town TV channel too. And it was just such a blast. I think I learned from them just so much about myself and what they want in a teacher and what they want to be able, like ways that they want to be able to learn. It was a huge learning experience, and I'm so grateful to hear all of their feedback. And I think, honestly, I would encourage any teacher to interview their students, and to get ideas from them, because I mean, who doesn't want to have a say in how they learn, right? So kids obviously want to have a say.
Absolutely. I mean, your past guests, you've got a lot of information when it comes to makerspaces, to doing tech in the classroom, and it's clearly there. But that was one that I went, you know what, that's just cool. And as I must say, it's probably something that we should do on this podcast, because often we speak with the experts that, you know, do a particular thing, and it's very interesting to hear what they've got to say, and highly valid. However, hearing the consumer, in this case, the student themselves, say, this is how we see how it should be in the classroom, mm-hmm. it's got so much rich opportunity. It really does.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that that was your recent episode. I thought that was really cool.
I ended the school year with that one, which is really cool. I got to think about it all summer and knowing that I was moving into this role, it was definitely a great way to end the year and to keep thinking throughout the summer. And I definitely am going to do it again. I've actually had a few kids that know about it. They're like, are you going to do another episode like that? I want to come on. And I hope that in the STEAM lab that I actually will be able to have the kids record themselves and start their own little podcasts, or we have a green screen in there. So start their own little TV shows. And I've been talking with the people that do community access media in town, and they're interested in putting the kids up on the TV channels if they create their own little episodes and stuff like that. So hopefully it snowballs and it grows into the kids being able to explore that different type of media, which will be really cool.
And the thing is okay, imagine you're one of these students doing this. Imagine the agency that you're creating for them, because, you know, often the time, you know, I will do what my teacher says type thing. But now they get to create and showcase their learning. And hang on, what that could mean is, you know, a decade from now, 2 decades from now, I kind of wonder what that actually sparks in their mind, because often it's I must consume said thing, so I have to do said test, so I get to move on to the next grade level or to university, whatever it is. I mean, the thing is that having people to actually say, here's what I generally know, here's what I believe in, here's what I love, et cetera, on, you know, audio or visual, whatever it is they do, means that I just like the fact that you give them a voice, and maybe you might be triggering something for later down their lives.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope. I hope to expose them to a whole bunch of different ways of learning and just ways or new ideas. And I like to tell the kids, I like to say, because, you know, the generic, what do you want to be when you grow up? I like to say, what job do you want to create, or what problem do you want to solve? Or your job might not even exist yet. What you do, like, who knows what's going to happen and what you can possibly do. And they always kind of look at me like, what do you mean my job doesn't exist yet? And then I'll say things like, guys, Snapchat didn't exist, you know, a few years ago. And now look at it. It's huge. The people that created Snapchat, oh, they are raking it in. And they're like, wait. Snapchat didn't exist at one point in time. And I was like, yeah, someone created their own career and their own job because they created that app. And I just use that as an example because all the kids are obsessed with Snapchat. And it always just kind of blows their mind. And so I hope as a teacher that I can provide them opportunities that help them to just see different career paths or to see different education paths that they can take.
I love that question. What problem could you solve? And I suppose you could do it the other way, is what would you like to create? But that kind of becomes very personal. And when you have something very personal, you'll often care about it more, funnily enough. So you might actually have some more drive to solve said problem, or what would you like to create means all of a sudden they've got to think more expansively and think, what would I like to create? Often people think that they have because they're, you know, for whatever options, whatever's happened in their lives and their geographical location and their economic status and everything else, perhaps they may have some predefined targets that they, you know, certain things that, you know, I did this because my parents did this or whatever it is that's going on. The thing is, as soon as you ask those two questions, all of a sudden, maybe that might trigger the idea of they can have a genuine belief in themselves to do something that's unexpected and is, you know, good for them. That's awesome. Hey, I really want to think about and hear about more about the STEAM Lab, because there's a lot of schools. I mean, I've been speaking with heaps of teachers, especially in these learning events we've been doing with teachers. The hearing about the setting up of makerspaces, it's a big thing now. And it's getting going. And you're doing it. And you're right in the thick of, you know, the genuine establishment of it. So before we go into what it looks like now, How did it look in the initial planning stages? Was it a quick scramble? Hey guys, we're going for it. We're going to make it happen. Or
no.
Was it more methodical? Like, how did the initial thing start?
Well, when my principal originally approached me, he had thought of just having it in one small space in the unused library, and it would, I mean, it would have been basically like a corner of the space. And then I'm pretty sure he visited a few different spaces. He spoke to different principals in the area that had created spaces. And from there, he realized that he wanted to have it be a much larger space. And since the library really wasn't being used for, we didn't have a librarian or anything like that, he wanted to reno the space to have it so that the kids could be in there whole bunch more, because really no classes were going in there. I mean, a few times, like here and there, teachers would go in and grab some books. I grabbed some books a few times, but there was no constant learning that was going in there. So we went basically from a few, maybe like, oh, I don't even know, a few hundred square feet maybe to 2,000. Which is crazy. Wow. And it blows my mind. I know. And there's still plenty of books that are in the library, and we've been going through, especially like science books, and trying to make sure that the books that are in there are up to date, and making sure that we have resources for the kids like that, but also bringing in brand new resources for the kids. And so we have low tech that's in there. That's the typical like cardboard kind of craft materials, hot glue guns, that kind of thing. Some tools that we have, sewing machine, that kind of thing. And then also a whole bunch of high tech. So we got iPads to go with different apps and the green screen that we have. What else? We have a 3D printer and Ozobots and Mickey kits. What else? We also have like the iconic Lego tables. We have all sorts of like Kinects and things like that. And also some plants that are growing in there to hopefully some edible ones. Like I have an avocado plant and a mango plant, and we're going to have all sorts of herbs and things that are growing in there so the kids can learn about that and like the farming aspect. Which is kind of cool. What else? There's so much going on, and just flexible seating so the kids can move around the furniture based on what they're doing. And we have really cool stools for them so they can really like move around their seats and be able to stand up at tables. Like the tables can go up or they can go down, so they can stand, they can sit, and they can use all the space. And it's not finished yet. The space hasn't been completely renoed yet, or it hasn't been all the stuff hasn't come in the mail yet, because things have just been taking a long time because of the start of the school year. A lot of things are either on back order or something like that, so it's not totally picture perfect ready yet. But the faces that the kids make when they walk in, and they're just in awe and just so just excited to be in this new lab, it's so awesome to be on the other side of it and to feel just as excited and to be providing all of these opportunities for the kids that, I mean, I honestly could only dream about months ago, and now it's here. And just how excited that they are, and they go home telling their parents, and I'll see them out like at the grocery store and they'll tell me how excited that their kids are to be able to be in this space. It's so worth it. And I wish I could just like shout out to the masses, to every administrator all over the world, and say this is so worth it for the kids. The kids, they want to build, they want to be able to create, they want to try out new technology and to become mini experts and being able to like use little robots and things like that. And it's just, it's so worth it to be able to provide this for the kids. It's been really, really cool. And I'm so looking forward to this year and to many, all the years like following to be able to grow the program and to hopefully host events for families and parents. It's funny because we had open house the other night and I had parents coming in and a few of them were so giddy and excited about the new lab. They were so excited for their kids, but then they were also like, oh man, like I kind of want to play with stuff and I want to be able to explore what they're exploring. And I was like, oh, don't worry. I'm planning on having those opportunities for you guys. Cause as a parent, I totally would want to be doing the same thing. And so it was kind of fun on that end too, to have the community support as well.
Getting to create your own playground, aren't you?
I know. It's a dream, honestly. Oh God, I can't even believe it. It's so amazing. I never ever would have thought that this opportunity would ever arise, and it has. And oh God, I wake up every morning just so grateful. I mean, I loved that school to begin with, but now I love it even more, and I didn't even know that was possible. You know, I leave every day from work thinking like, wow, I'm so lucky. And when I get excited in the morning that I get to go to work, I mean, that's not the case everywhere, and that's not the case for everyone. And I'm so incredibly grateful for this opportunity.
And what I love about this is the buy-in you're getting from the parents. I mean, obviously, kids are going to love it. Hey, I get to play with robots. I get to do cool stuff with plants and whatever yeah. else is going on in your room. I mean, they're totally going to be into that. And that it's almost predictable that they're going to want to do that. I mean, which kid doesn't want to fiddle and create? But getting the parents on board is fantastic, because in those parents, will we not just, hey, here's some support. From an emotional point of view, like there's potentially, they will have their own networks who can support this makerspace. And that's what I'm yeah. seeing in these other makerspaces. They really become very individualized based on the cohorts of kids who happen to hang around, because the parents themselves are going to want to help out. And Jim, you've got a really big opportunity here, and especially considering you're starting it from the ground up. I mean, where could you, I mean, you've still got stuff in the mail. I mean, let alone this year. I mean, what do you imagine this would end up looking like 2 years from now or 3 years from now? I'm not going to say 10.
Oh, man.
Like a whole year.
Ideally, I mean, I like in my head, I have big plans, and my principal and administrators, they are so pro big plans too, obviously, since they're, you know, the ones that are backing this. And so I think that's one, that's definitely such a huge support to be able to have that. So 2 years from now, I would really want to have events frequently where I can bring in the community, and I would love to be working with businesses and local groups that would come in and shine with what they know and be able to reach the students that way. I love having visitors in my room. Last year, I was notorious for having guest visitors all the time, especially when we were learning about the human body systems. I had guest speakers coming in because I had so many different parents and people that I knew that were in the medical field. So I invited everyone I know to come in. And because, I mean, they're professionals. So obviously they are going to know an incredible amount of information, much more than I would ever know, because they went to school for it. And that's, you know, what they're doing every day of their lives. So I love having guest visitors. I would love to have many, many people come in and be able to work with the kids. I've had several people already offer and reach out to say that they would love to start working with the kids. So it just kind of depends on, really, I kind of want to get my feet wet and figure things out. And then I want to have some people coming in, definitely. Let's see. So I'm starting, I did this past summer, I did camps, and I'm starting up a STEM club for the second year in a row, and I would love to continue doing that. But I would also really love to see the lab be a big resource for the educators that are in the district, and especially in my school. I really want them to view it as something that they can come to me and say, hey, like, this coming up, we are going to start learning about, I don't know, the solar system or something like that. What can we do together where we can use this theme lab, and also what they're going to be learning in, like, my homeroom class, and combine forces. And also, I would love to be able to support the teachers that way, but also not just the science teachers. I would really love to support all of the different subjects too, and really show that STEAM is not just the science and the math, but it's also can be used in social studies, and it can be used in ELA, and then and we can combine forces to do really cool things. So this year I have my plan for the year I have laid out, and I'm hoping to have some cross-curricular activities with the kids, so they can start seeing that STEAM isn't just science and math and all the other things, but it's also social studies, it's also you know, reading and literacy. So I don't know, I feel like that was a really long answer. But basically, say I just wanted to keep building and to be really as a great resource for the community and the kids, and also kind of like what you were saying on my podcast, you saying yes to as many things as you possibly can. I would love to be able to do the same, because I want to give the kids the world, you know, like every teacher wants to do. And living in the community that I'm working with, I want to be able to give the community the world too, and to be able to provide as much as I possibly can. And if I don't know the answer, finding people that do know the answer and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's so cool. And I love the fact that you're looking forward to be creating some events in your makerspace, because
yeah.
I mean, your STEAM Lab 100% is going to work with the kids. I totally can see that. I can see how you can link it to curriculum with a Common Core and everything else, 100%. But creating these additional events means you get this vibrancy in the school that, whilst, you know, schools are vibrant in their own case, having this thing a focal point for STEAM itself means that it elevates itself. I mean, often the events that happen in schools that bring the public in can be around drama and arts and all the things, and I get that, but it's kind of nice to bring in things around science, because it's not often seen as an event as such. And bringing in industry professionals into your talk with your students is unreal. In fact, actually, anyone listening, if you feel that maybe you might be in an area where you might want particular experts and you may not have them in your location, or for some reason they can't get to your school, there is a platform called NEPRIS. Have you heard of NEPRIS?
No.
Yeah, NEPRIS is kind of cool. NEPRIS, I mean, it quote unquote says connecting industry to classrooms. And what it actually does is it does it virtually. So think Skype and the like. So the idea is...
Cool.
You are validated, not educators, because I'm used to saying that all the time. You got people who have been, you know, working with children, checked and made sure that they've got something relevant to say to students. But thousands of people, they could be doctors, lawyers, plumbers, engineers, people working in food or whatever it is they do, they have actually signed up to be, hey, I want to share what I do to students.
That's so cool. That's kind of similar to like Skype a scientist,
effectively,
but it's not just scientists.
Yeah, and because it's so broad, I mean, they've got, I can't remember what the numbers were. I was speaking to the CEO a couple of years ago, I can't remember. It was like, at the time, it was 4,000 or 5,000 different people available. It might be 10,000 now. I'd have to go check it out. Look up nepris.com, NEPRIS.com. And obviously, it's really cool when you get people face-to-face in your room. I totally get that. But there might be times when you might be doing a particular topic and you go, you know what? I've got, I know my brain's just focusing on plans. I know maybe it's the mornings. This is how my brain's going right now. But maybe you might want to connect with a botanist working in the field. There's that opportunity is there, and I love it. And it makes it rich and rewarding for the kids, which is cool. So if you're creating this STEAM lab, you got mail on its way, but obviously it's actually up and functional. I mean, you're a couple of weeks into the school year and you've got lessons to run. How long do the kids get to spend in your room?
Yeah, so that's also been like a huge adjustment for me to becoming a specialist teacher and not seeing the same kids every day or all day every day. So I have the kids for one block, and I actually see one class from every grade level for 5 days in a row. And then it switches to a new class for 5 days in a row. And we cycle through the school year like that. So I'll actually see the kids, I think it's five cycles throughout the year. So it only ends up being around 25 classes, give or take. There's also some other extra things. We have PLC so I'll see the kids extra. So it's more than 25, but it's not a huge amount, which is kind of crazy because, well, one, I have to see all the kids in the whole school, obviously. So there needs to be, and to be able to see all the kids, but it's kind of crazy to me because I wish I could just see them all the time and every day. And I wish every kid could be in the lab every single day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I was actually just thinking just there listening to that, because I mean, I could just see the logistics. You've got this awesome space that everyone wants to play in, which means you have to timetable it out. One of the things that happens in a lot of museums is outreach boxes, usually called museum in a box or something like that. And they get sent out to schools and libraries and things, so they get to use these things for a couple of weeks and then they get sent back.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cool or a little bit interesting? Could you get some students as a project to create a box that gets sent around the school?
That would be really cool.
I don't know if it's an idea yet, that's actually valid yet. But it's the fact that you got this timetable constraint, and that's totally was gonna happen no matter what. You got no choice. But being able to almost outreach some of your stuff to then get booked in by teachers. Say, hey, for example, you're using Ozobots and things. Obviously you want it in your room, but there might be some things there that you know are kind of, they're going to be down for this term for, they're not going to get used. There's no planning in the curriculum yet for you to use it. But I wonder whether that'd be useful.
I think that's an amazing idea.
All right, you got some homework.
Yeah, I'd be so down for that.
Yeah, but I kind of feel, because you hear about these schools setting up makerspaces and they're always contested. They've always got this issue for access.
Time. Yeah.
It could be a way. I don't know. It's interesting. But tell you what, in the meantime, though, you've got this, great space being set up. What sort of projects are brewing for this semester?
I actually don't. Semesters don't really apply to me too much because of like the way the schedule is. So I actually am, because of the cycles, which is kind of also crazy. It's like an interesting adjustment. So basically what I did is I looked at the school year and I looked at how many times I was going to see each group of kids. And I planned out, pencil planned. I haven't written all the lessons obviously yet, but I planned out how I wanted the school year to look. And in speaking with my principal, he really wants to provide opportunities for the kids so that all the kids can have the same opportunities from every grade level. So everyone in sixth grade will be doing every project. They'll all have opportunities to use all the different things that are in the lab that sixth grade specific, and like the same for like the third graders and things like that. So I planned out basically when they were going to be using the different technology or the different parts of the lab, and I planned that out. And then from there, I've been planning, all right, so if they're going to use the Ozobots this cycle, what am I going to do for lessons? And so I've been looking into all of the curriculum that Ozobots provide, and I've been reading up on all of that, and like the same with all the different other technology. Because as much as I love all the technology that has come in the mail, and like I've heard all about it for all Twitter, for the past several months, I've been putting out tweets like, hey, does anyone have any advice or anyone have any ideas on things that I should look into for a makerspace? I haven't actually used some of the stuff that's coming in. So it's a huge learning curve for me too. I know later we'll talk about different, like, when have you failed? but it's a huge learning curve. So I'm anticipating that, you know, it's going to be a huge learning curve for me. So it's going to be a huge learning curve for the kids, which is, I mean, so cool, really, that we're kind of learning together. And so I've been planning out the school year like that and really making sure that I get to all the different major things. Like, I mean, every single kid has come into the STEAM lab and the first question they say is, when can we use a 3D printer, right? So I want to be able to allow all the kids to be able to see the 3D printer in action and in some capacity. I don't know if every single kid is going to be able to 3D print something, because that's a whole lot of 3D printing, and we haven't turned on the 3D printer yet because it needs to be on the network and everything like that. So I have no idea how fast it prints, right? So I don't know if we have enough for 800 printed projects. So little things like that that I need to figure out. But right now, at the beginning of the school year, so I have 8 cycles. So I see 8 different groups of kids from each grade level. All right, no, 7 different groups of kids from each grade level. So every 5 days, it's a new group. And so at the beginning of the year, I have been doing some low-tech things while everything's been coming in the mail. And I actually have started out the school year with kind of getting to know you making. And the kids have been building with cardboard, which is really cool. And they get so excited about it. And some of them are like, wait a minute, we're in this brand new lab and we're gonna build with cardboard? I'm like, yeah, guys. Wait till you get your hands on the cardboard. And then it's true. Like, as soon as they get to start building and using it, they're like, oh, this is awesome. And then they're like the first kids in the classroom the next day saying, when can I start building? so they're actually building superhero elements that highlight their superpower, because the assistant principal at the back to school, like meeting that she has with all the kids, presentation, she wanted to have everyone think about what their superpower is and what characteristics they're most proud of about themselves. And it was kind of crazy that she had that be her theme, because I had been bouncing around that idea all summer. I actually got a lot of inspo from the TV show Making It. I don't know, do you guys have it in the US?
Offerman.
It's just 6 episodes, but they actually have season 2 coming out, and they just got like the green light for season 2, and it was so impactful for me as an educator, but also just a lover of Maker Ed. They have all sorts of different people on that show making just various things, and they're all experts in some sort of field, whether it's like they're experts in making felt crafts, or they're experts in woodworking and things like that. And so they had a different challenge that they had to do every week. And I actually got some inspo from that TV show, because they started out with getting to know you crafts or making from their first episode. And I was like, oh, I should absolutely do a getting to know you one. So that's kind of where I got the superhero idea, because I love superheroes. And then it just fit perfectly into what the school was promoting or trying to get the kids to think about. So they're actually creating all sorts of different superhero elements. And I told them that it can be anything that their heart desires, as long as it's school appropriate. So they can make utility belts, they can make capes, they can make masks, they can make hats, they can make shoes, really whatever it is that they want to make that they think their superhero needs. And it has to highlight whatever characteristic they're trying to show. So for example, I've had a few kids, here's a few examples. So one of the kids said that she was really proud of her athletic skills, in particular running. So she created shoes that they highlighted her superpower, because they were like with flames on the side kind of thing. and I had another student's, her Her superpower was sewing, so she created a sewing machine out of cardboard that she would carry around. And I had another kid, he created glasses because his superpower was reading. So he created really cool looking glasses that he would wear. So just it's been really cool seeing what they come up with, but it's also kind of interesting because a lot of the kids will come up and say, hey, can I make glasses? Or can my superpower be that I'm a good artist? And I, it's kind of cool because I tell them, you guys don't have to ask me. You can decide what you're going to make. You can decide what superpower you want to highlight. And it just, it's one of those things that I've been telling the kids too at the beginning of the year, where I say, you guys are going to have a lot of say in what you get to do in this lab. You get to have a say in what you're creating and how you're going to create it. And it's been kind of cute to see their expressions and how they react to that, because it's not always the case, being able to have a say in how you learn or what you're learning, and to be able to provide that for the kids in the lab is really cool in itself, but it's also a huge learning curve for them too.
Absolutely.
I was just thinking about the challenge aspect of this, because I mean, obviously having the ability for them to do stuff around what they're interested in is awesome. And also the idea of being honest, you know, often STEAM is about, you know, creatively solving a problem using engineering and mathematics skills and scientific, you know, background, et cetera. The challenge aspect is interesting because, I mean, you're reaching out to different teachers to see what they're doing in their maker spaces and things. And mm-hmm. I kind of wonder whether there's an opportunity to then create a, you know, a local challenge amongst some local schools who also have maker spaces to that kids could then build towards a goal. I mean, whilst you were saying that, it kind of made me think about the F1 in schools program. It's a huge program. You know, you seriously think on things like 17,000 schools or so in 40 odd nations around the world have kids aged 9 and up doing, trying to create their world's fastest miniaturized F1 car.
Oh, interesting. I've never heard of this.
Yeah, it's insane. If you want to check that out, it's f1inschools.com. It's a big thing. It's a huge thing. It's a non-profit, but the idea being is that kids from age 9 and up, they use CAD and all the rest to create a miniature air-powered balsa wood F1 car.
Cool.
And they race them along track, and they're global competitions. Kids compete against each other, and eventually they get to like the world championships of this, you know, this F1 in schools thing. It's an amazing thing. And I kind of thought, I mean, that's a great thing to get involved in, but at the same point, there's no reason why you couldn't do this at a local level in your district with places. And then the teachers, you know, the curriculum advisors could create a challenge that suits all these particular schools and go, kids, you've been creating some stuff. You've been exploring your own opportunities. Hey, we've got an opportunity to work together on this, and we want our school to win.
Yeah.
That could be a bit of fun.
Yeah. And even on even a smaller scale from that, you know, I see the kids 5 days in each cycle, but then I have the different, the added lessons that are during the PLC time. So basically their homeroom teachers have meetings or a PD that they have to do weekly, and so I'll see the kids during that time, and I have a little more flexibility during that time, and that's where I hope to have different challenges for the kids, where they come in and I present them with a problem. I'm like, guys, here's the problem, and you guys have to figure out a solution to it or something like that, and I hope to do it a little bit along the lines of what time of year it is, or if there's any special events or holidays or things like that coming along the lines. And also I have plans for each grade level to do their own design challenge with a different theme. So last year when I was teaching sixth grade, we did the cardboard challenge, which is through Kane's Arcade. Have you heard of it?
No.
Oh my God, you gotta look it up. Kane's Arcade started from a kid named Kane out in LA, Los Angeles, where he spent the whole summer creating an arcade out of cardboard boxes in his dad's used car shop or used car parts shop. And he didn't have anyone all summer to play his arcade games because mostly people were buying the used car parts off of the dad's online shop and not coming into the shop. But then randomly a filmographer came in and saw this elaborate arcade, and the filmographer was like, hey, can I make a video about this and how cool your arcade is? And it, from there it grew, and they ended up doing a flash mob for Kane, and thousands of people came to play it, and it like was all over the news all over the world, and everyone was talking about this arcade. And all over the world, kids started making arcade games out of cardboard boxes. And so they decided, why not have a cardboard challenge that people can participate in every year, and everyone can submit pictures and everything like that. And so we did that for the first time last year in sixth grade, and it was huge. The news came and took pictures, and the kids talked about it all year. The parents came in, and people came in to play the games, and it was so much fun. It was definitely one of the highlights of my year. And so we're doing it again this year with the sixth grade. And I thought, well, the kids had such a blast with it. What if we have some kind of design challenge that's for each grade? So the sixth grade will do the arcades, and that can be like their special thing that they get to look forward to. And then what if we have a different design challenge for fifth grade, and then a different one for fourth grade, and different one for third grade, and it can be like hyped up, so the kids are getting all excited for it, and then they can do the challenge, and the parents can come in and explore whatever it was that they made, and things like that. And so I've been working with some of the teachers and asking them, like, hey, like, what are some major topics that you guys learn about throughout the year? Like, obviously there's the curriculum standards that like I'm looking at, but I really want to know, like, what do the kids love? Like, what gets them excited? Like, what major themes do you teach throughout the year that you would recommend for a project in my room? And so like fourth grade, they said electricity is a big one. So I'm hoping to make a design challenge around electricity. And in fifth grade, they learn about colonial America. So when the settlers came to America, so I'm hoping to do something about that and that kind of stuff. So it's been that's been really exciting too. All the technology is obviously super exciting and super new, but it's also really exciting to still do or still get ideas for the low tech too. And I think all the hype around it that I'm definitely going to try and stir up will hopefully get the kids extremely excited to be able to do that stuff too, and not just, you know, be running in to touch and play with the Ozobots or running into the lab to try and play with the green screen and stuff like that. They'll be also super hyped to do the low tech fun stuff too.
So cool. I mean, that arcade concept, imagine that. I can see how the kids would just love to play in that. That makes
sense. Oh my god, it was a blast. I highly recommend it, honestly. I mean, even, I don't know if you have kids or not, but like if they're not, you know, adults or anything, I don't know how old you are.
I've got two minis. One is 6 years old, one is 9 years old.
Oh, perfect. They would totally be into Kane's Arcade and the Cardboard Challenge. It's like the perfect age, especially the 9-year-olds. To create arcade games out of cardboard, because then they'll be able to play like what they made, and you guys can play it too, and they can get the whole family involved. Oh yeah, it's a huge blast. You should have that. You should do that as one of your parties.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It's so much fun. And that's really what the concept of the Cardboard Challenge is, to just get kids building and proud of what they're making and excited and wanting to show people, like, hey, like, I made this and I came up with it completely on my own. And you'll be surprised what the kids like make. I mean, I had kids creating skee ball which was crazy cool. Like they made different, whack-a-mole they made where someone would crawl inside the box to put the different things up and you would be whacking them like on the top and like, just like things like target, like darts and stuff like that. It was, it blows my mind what they come up with too. Because you just tell them, like, you guys are doing arcade games. Like, what are you going to think of? And then they think of games that, I mean, I wouldn't even imagine to think of.
That's so cool. And yes, now I've got some homework to go look at this more deeply. This is really, really cool. It'd make an awesome holiday program. I could totally see that would work as well.
Oh, yeah.
This is fantastic. Hey, in amongst all this, I mean, you're not short of ideas. I can totally hear that. there will have been some challenges and some obstacles in terms of setting this thing up and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us a bit about those.
Probably the major obstacle right now for me is that things just have taken a while to come in the mail. So I had big plans for cycle one with all the kids where I wanted to use like a few different pieces of the tech, but it just simply they just didn't come in on time. And in my first group of kids that I had, they were like, what do you mean? It's like things aren't in the mail yet. Does that mean like all the other kids in the school are going to be able to use this stuff? And then we aren't because we're first. And like kids were all nervous and upset. And that's when I decided, all right, so the plans that I created, I need to just push off and I need to create new plans because I want to just not worry about whether things are going to come in the mail on time. And so that's where I had decided that we're going to start with the low tech and we're going to do the superhero stuff and get the kids hyped up that way. So that's been a huge obstacle too, because I didn't expect to have to like change my plans. You know, the first week of school that I had planned, you know, spend so much time planning all summer, but it's fine. I mean, I'm pretty flexible in that sense. Where I've never been afraid to say to the kids, like, guys, this isn't working, or this is not going to happen today. Let's figure out what we can do, or let's fix whatever it is that's not going right. And I mean, it's easy for me to do it with a group of kids. It's definitely not as easy to do it with adults and to admit like, oh geez, guys, like this isn't working. But like when I'm with the kids, I just feel like I'm in my element. So I don't mind showing them like when I've failed at something, and I encourage them to be okay with in their failures too, and be like, guys, we can just fix it. We can figure out what the problem is and solve it. But yeah, it's also been definitely a huge learning curve for me to just, I am kind of a free bird with, I love flexible seating and I love having the class be like messy because the kids are building and there's stuff everywhere. And as long as we clean it up at the end of class, like that's fine with me kind of thing. And also, I don't mind when the kids are loud and busy and excited kind of thing, but it's not always the case with every teacher. So it's definitely been a learning curve for me too, to be able to think about like, all right, so I know how I am as an educator, but I can't expect everyone else to just be totally on board with all of this, like to be totally on board with projects and things coming back into the classrooms, or just, you know, different ways of teaching and stuff like that. So it's been a learning curve for me to be able to not only work with all of the different types of kids that are now coming through my door instead of my core group of homeroom kids that I was used to in years past, but also to work with every single other educator too. And it's great. I mean, I love that I get to be able to see everyone in the school and not just like the couple of people that I usually would see last year because of simply like the layout. And so now I get to go everywhere and see everyone, which is really awesome. But it's also like, I got to tell myself, like, all right, you have to remember, Tori, that not everyone appreciates a mess the way you do. You know, that kind of thing.
Always the truth. That is true. But mind you, I believe that there's always a learning in students to clean up after your mess. So therefore the mess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but now that's, I get it. And then obviously, I mean, having a curveball like, oh, my stuff is not here for my lesson would be a curveball. It's a real one.
Yeah.
And you have to be flexible and adaptable. And all those things that people hear about in the brochure about being a teacher, you have to embody on day one.
Makes it tough
when you first, you know, set up a makerspace. Look, Steamlab's clearly humming. I can see that as you go through the various cycles of the school, it's going to just grow and grow and grow. And it's fantastic. And undoubtedly, there'll be people listening in just going, well, where do I start? I mean, what would be some advice if you had some elementary or middle school teachers or whoever was in front of you, and they're going, you know what, I think I've got buy-in from my school or district to get this thing done. What would be your advice for, you know, you're kind of like the first steps. What would you suggest?
Yeah. So I would say first steps, if like your school isn't moving towards having a lab or having like a specific makerspace place, like that's for the whole school, I would say have one in your classroom. And it can be so small and it can be so simple. It could just be odds and ends that you have and you encourage the kids to build in that way, or it can be like Legos or Connects or something. Like last year I had a box of Connects and the kids would pretty much dive into it and just go searching for different pieces and whatever it was that they were making. They were so excited to do that. And I would say start small like that, and you can have obviously lofty goals, but don't expect those goals to be able to be reached right away, simply because it's just a huge learning curve to be able to have like a little makerspace and to see how the kids react to it and how you react to it, and setting different limits to that. And then I would say if you're looking to have more maker ed or STEM in your classroom, find opportunities to weave them into lessons, or find different opportunities throughout the year where you can have special making time or STEM time. That's what I did. That's how I started. I would think to myself, like, when can I like make sure that the kids are getting hands-on learning? And it was silly things like, oh, Pi Day? Well, we're going to have a special Pi Day lesson today, guys, where you guys are going to be creating such and such because it's, you know, a special math day. Or just different like holidays and stuff like that. Instead of just breezing by St. Patrick's Day, why don't we make leprechaun traps, that kind of thing. And that's where I started gaining my confidence in being able to trust myself in those kinds of lessons, but also being able to take a step back and let the kids have a say in what they're making and how they're making it, and not being afraid to let them have all like basically artistic liberty, I guess, maker liberty. and then from that, when I would do those little lessons and everything, then I would think to myself, when we're reading a book or something like that, I would think, can I weave in a STEM lesson into like what book we're reading? And I did that with one of my favorite books, and I've talked about this on Twitter. People are like, stop talking about this book. Is Mercedes and the Chocolate Pilot. And it also, there's also a few different stories regarding the Chocolate Pilot. He's also known as a candy bomber. And it was World War II when Berlin was ostracized and they needed resources and everyone was desperate that was living in Berlin. And they were desperate for resources and food. And a candy bomber, Chocolate Pilot, he would start dropping parachutes of candy to the kids. And there's a whole, it's such a beautiful story. And it's really cool because it's true. So the kids connect to it. So from that story, I said to the kids, you guys are going to pretend that you're the chocolate pilot and you need to get the candy down to the kids. And so they created their own parachutes, that kind of stuff. So I started thinking that way. And then from there, I would say, try the cardboard challenge or try a challenge like that and you will get the bug. It will be so addicting and you will want to do it every day of every minute, it's just something is so incredible at just watching the kids get excited about building and making, and especially the cardboard challenge because it's arcades, so they really get excited about it because who doesn't love going to an arcade and just seeing that. And I feel like an event like that is also really fun because it gets the parents involved, it gets the parents on board in the community, and the administrators, they love to come and play the games and everything, and they connect in that way, and they're like, oh, like, we should do this more, like, let's try and find more opportunities for teachers to be able to do that too. So I don't know if you were looking for that long of an answer, but that's basically how I started with my just STEM and making and interweaving it. And I know it's so hard too. It's finding the time to be able to do it because right now we're pretty siloed in each subject. Like at 10 o'clock is when we start math, you know, 11 o'clock is science. And it's hard to, and a lot of the times the subjects come with boxed curriculum too. And it's hard to be able to weave in opportunities for the kids to do hands-on or for the kids to do STEM lessons and things like that. So just finding little places where you can weave it in, and then eventually you'll realize that there's so many opportunities to weave it in, and you'll get confident in doing that. So I would say start small and then build.
I totally agree. And even just hearing about the story thing, recent past guest, Gillian King-Cargyle from STEM Read at Northern Illinois University, getting into the chats around how there's so much science to be found in fiction books.
And oh, yeah.
There's heaps, and you could be totally in your makerspace creating the contraptions and weird things that are found in all sorts of fiction. And that's a whole area which I could totally, full-heartedly agree upon without a doubt. Look, Tori, thank you for your time and being very frank about exactly what's worked and the challenges that are generally out there when you're creating a space. I mean, you really are breaking your ground in your school. You've got stuff still arriving. It's not even made completely yet. I 100% think that if I, you know, chatted with you in 5 years, 10 years from now, I've got this sneaking suspicion that you'd still say it's not finished, which is great.
I mean, it's that's pretty much the goal though, right? To have it never be finished because you always want it to be growing.
Yeah, that's it.
And to be changing. I mean,
Walt Disney was famous for saying Disneyland will never be finished.
Oh, I like that.
So why can't this be applied anywhere else? It's good enough for him. No, I really do. And look, thank you very much. And also, you know, congratulations again. People, check out Steam Up the Classroom. It really is a fantastic podcast. I mean, you've got four more episodes coming out as you go along as you move into your season two. But there is really clear that your school has got a high benefit for having, you know, someone so passionate about, you know, STEAM and making stuff happen. And really, you know, congratulations. And look, I'd love to hear, if you're listening into this and you are creating or have created a makerspace which you know is, you know, starting to get going a little bit, you know, reach out, tell us a bit about what you've been doing.
Please share.
I know Tori would totally like to hear from you. Tori, how could they get in touch with you?
I'm very active on Twitter, and you can find me at Steam Up the CLSRM. And my name's Tori Cameron, so you can search that way too. And I also have a website, and it's pretty much devoted to the podcast. So it's steamuptheclassroom.com. So those are the two best ways.
Easy. So simple. Yeah. All good. So look, have a fantastic evening. I know it's quite late for you, whereas for me, it's sitting right about lunchtime on a Sunday.
Yeah, so I don't know we're about 10 p.m.
10 p.m. Yeah, so it's definitely time for sleep for you, and it's time for me to go find out what I'm going to eat for lunch. But at the same point in time, thank you very much for everyone for listening in on this. I hope you got a lot out of it. I'm pretty sure you would have. And if you love what you're hearing, you definitely share it around. You know, the 100% other teachers are considering doing this type of work too in their school. And hearing from people like Tori is really important to hear. You know, people
thank
are
you.
Getting going. Yeah. So thank you very much, Tori. Have a fantastic evening. And I'll
thank you. I'm so honored that you invited me onto your podcast.
Absolutely. I'm very much wanted to have you on. Awesome job. I'll catch you another time.
Yeah, thanks.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Grab a copy of our new book, Be Amazing, How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing Book. It's available in hard copy and ebook. Go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS.
Well, there we go. We're just hearing from Tori Cameron, who you can really tell is just having a blast setting up this STEAM lab. And I really want to see what happens as the years go by, because I've got this funny feeling that this work will never be done. Absolutely. But Tori, well done. Love your work with this. And I hope that if you're listening in, you're thinking, is there a way in your school, in your library, wherever you might be, is there a space where you can create a makerspace? Is it possible? Maybe don't worry about too much about the big budgets. How can you do it with a smaller budget and grow from there? Can you involve community groups? Can you get some funding or sponsorship to make it happen? There are ways around it. And I know it can be tough in certain areas, but it's often the first step that you take that will lead to a longer journey, without a doubt. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this. And if you want to connect with us in Physics Education USA, because yeah, we are actually there too, please just jump on physicseducation.com and go say hi to Jeanette. She is definitely down in San Diego doing a whole bunch of stuff, but is certainly able to come and over to your school, no matter where you might be able to help out with getting some maker stuff going on too. Anyway, been listening to me, Ben Newsom from Physics Education. I hope you've had a fantastic day. I hope you have a fantastic week. And I hope to catch you another day. All the best.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS. This podcast is part of the Australian Educators Online Network. AEON.net.au